It's Monday, the 11th of December, and you're listening to the Red Army Roundup. I'm your host, Paul Hinton, and as ever, I'm joined by Sean Phillips and Aaron Wren. Hello there, gents.
Hello there, Paul.
Good evening, Paul.
Well, welcome back to Red Army Roundup, everyone. Apologies for the couple of weeks gap. Real life and a trip to Edinburgh for Aaron and myself to catch the game up there sort of meant that we just couldn't get our schedules together. So we're coming to you nice and early this week to make sure that we don't miss it again. We're not going to obviously recap the last 3 weeks. I'm sure you'll be pleased to know. Prior to this weekend's action, we'd missed five games, and in those five games, we'd only dropped 1 point. So, yeah, all pretty, pretty good news there. We just didn't get round to discussing it. We had the unusual feat this weekend of a Friday night game home to Guildford. We'll talk about that, followed by the excellent road win in Nottingham. Player of the week, as always, and then some news from around the league. Look at the Challenge Cup quarterfinals, the BBC Team of the Year. We've had a burning question from Ken Wynne-Jones, which we'll get to, before looking at our upcoming weekend and the schedule over the festive period. So an action-packed show, and we won't hang around. So Friday night, Guildford, who'd been our nemesis so far this year, taking 4 points off us in the Challenge Cup. We faced them for the first time in league action, Sean. And Devils possibly wary after, you know, losing those two games, started quickly and, you know, took a strong two-goal lead in the first period.
Yeah, well, I missed the first period and walked in and suddenly looked up at the score and thought, well, that's a good start, given how we did perform against Guildford in the road leg of the Challenge Cup group stages, which was probably our worst performance of the year. And the home game, we were no great streaks either. So, yeah, to walk in and be greeted by that scoreline was encouraging. And, I was looking forward to the rest of the game, but it sort of seemed to not really pick back up from there.
No, I totally forgot that you'd missed the first period. Bryce Reddick and Paul Crowder getting the Devils' goals within the first 11 minutes of the game. And the Devils strengthened the lead in the second period with a power play goal from Lane Ulmer. Because the Devils don't like making things easy for themselves, we ran into a spot of penalty bother with Patrick Aston first hitting the 2+10. The second of the night for 2+10 for checking from behind, first one from Matthew Myers, before Joey Haddad took a 2+2 for roughing and slashing. Both power plays resulting in a goal. And a 3-2 at the end of the second. And Sean, I think, you know, after a couple of collapses in recent weeks, that there were some real nerves that we could be looking at another one.
Yeah, I think that that sort of does seep into your mind when it's been a recurring theme. And so I think there was a bit of nervous energy around the building. And it did go a bit flat in there as well. Atmosphere wasn't very good throughout the night, and only, you know, middle of the third did it sort of pick back up for a couple of minutes after, you know, a bit of physicality was put back in play, back into place, and we started to sort of try and get a grip of the game a bit more. And yeah, I think I can understand why people were a bit nervous.
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, it was very flat. It sort of felt very much like it was Friday night. People were getting in from work, and almost it was, yeah, I know for myself, and you missed a whole period, but it's just quite a lot of rush on a Friday to get yourself to the rink. And I think it probably that didn't help matters. Third period was pretty tight, but got quite tense towards the end, where Drew Parris takes 2 minutes for elbows, and then just 20 seconds later puts the puck straight over the 20 seconds after that he was killed. Put the puck straight over the plexi for another 2 minutes, which also got killed. Jake Morissette wrapping everything up with an empty netter with less than 30 seconds on the clock to calm those nerves. So a good win. Probably the biggest thing, obviously going forward is going to be the DOPS review that will be coming out in the next couple of days on Matthew Myers and Patrick Aslin. The Myers check from behind looked the right call to me, but I think it was the right call in that I wouldn't expect there to be much more. And if anything, the Aston one was probably softer. Did you think much of the Aston one, Sean? Probably the only one you saw.
Yeah, I think it was just your standard. It's difficult to say. I think obviously I was quite far. It was the opposite of the ice for me, but he did go straight through the numbers. You knew he was going to get called. I don't think there was any particular force in it. It was a bit of a push from behind rather than a hit from behind, if you know what I mean. Slightly showing a resemblance to the same hit that Tyson Strachan made in Manchester that got reviewed. I'd say it was that sort of, you know, level of contact and intent on it. So I'd be surprised if Aston got a suspension off the back of it, to be quite honest with you.
Obviously, fingers crossed that they both stay that way. So it was the Friday night, good win for the Devils, and a bit of a confidence booster, a nice little winning run heading up to Nottingham on Saturday, where I'm going to be honest, I still didn't feel massively confident. Not a place you go to expecting a win very often. But a really solid performance, Sean. So the Devils, win that first period 1-0 with Paul Crowder swinging his stick even. A puck just below the crossbar and putting it in. But a really well-controlled game and, high intensity on the forecheck. That Devils out shooting Panthers, 14-7 in that first.
Yeah, we were massively dominant all through the game. I'm glad we got on the board in the first because the way that we played, if we hadn't scored a goal, I think that would have just completely killed us. We were relentless in the forecheck. We worked hard. We battled for every puck and got pucks deep, cycled really well. When we gained the zone, we cycled around a lot better than we do normally. No, you normally go to Nottingham and Sheffield, and that's the sort of game they play against you. But we went there and did it to them, and it really, really worked for us. And it probably should have been a lot more than one goal, to be quite honest with you. And but for their goaltender, Galbraith, it probably would have been, and he did stand on his head at times, and other times when we had clear-cut opportunities, we were shooting a bit high and wide. But overall, the performance in itself was one of the best this year, I think. And you listen to Corey Nielsen's post-match interview, and he says that we're the best forechecking team that he's seen. And I think that was a perfect analysis of the game because we were fantastic.
Yeah, really good. And it's what we built a lot of our success on in recent seasons, and it does seem to think it's been lacking a little bit, so really good to see that back. Second period, another goal for the Devils from Joey Martin, again outshooting the Panthers 12-7, and then in the third outshooting them 11-7 as well, so a massively dominant game in terms of shots on target. The third period was pretty mainly defined by the two almost full 5-on-3 penalties that Devils had and squandered. Obviously 5-on-3 is great for killing a bit of time, but almost four minutes of it killed is always going to be a massive confidence boost for the team that kills it. And that showed, Sean, with Panthers getting the one back, about a minute after they were all wrapped up, and set us up for a really nervous 7.5 minutes.
Yeah, and that is a massive momentum swing, as you just said. I think after they killed the first 5-on-3, you and I sort of were talking, and we sort of said that could really be, the end of it. That could be the undoing. We could lose this game in regulation because it's such a big momentum swing. And then to go and get another 5-on-3, we sort of looked and said, we've got to do it. We've got to score a goal. Surely I put the game to bed. And then, I think that it was one of those situations where you don't score 2 5-on-3s. You play that well. And suddenly, in the back of your mind, there's that little nag that says, there's no way we're going to win this game. And that did sort of seep into my mind. And it was, in fairness, it was a really poor power play as well. Both of them were pretty atrocious. We're going to need to do a lot of work on that this week. And
I thought it was the interest, because we also had a 5-on-3 against Guildford, which failed to capitalise. And it's something that I've noticed a few times throughout the season, but having that many that close sort of focused your attention on it, that, for me, as not a hockey coach, obviously, a 5-on-3 is a lot of space on the ice that you can exploit, you can stretch defencemen.
And we're, the Devils, we're, very,
very static and very tight static. As well.
Yeah, static is the perfect word and how I would describe it. You know, it's the sort of it is that advantage you have, all that space, and the idea is that you cycle so quickly that the three that are on the ice can't get in the shooting lanes. But we don't seem to cycle quickly enough to get a good shooting.
You almost feel stood so close to each other as well that even if you're cycling it quickly, they've only got to skate about two steps.
Yeah.
They can get to the next man. It's a really bizarre setup, and it almost seems overdrilled to me that that's what you've got to do.
Not only that, it's dangerous as well, because if you're that static and that close, you know, in that tight confinement of the goal, and someone gets a stick on it, they've got a breakaway. They're going straight the other end, and they're getting a one-on-one.
Yeah, and I think that happened at the end of one of the. I think when one of the 5-on-3s became a 5-on-4, we just didn't drop anyone back, and the puck rebounded straight up to the man leaving the box. It was quite bizarre. So as you said, probably a bit of work to do on there, but you know, the only real negative that you take away from such a good performance, and you know, as you said, you don't take 2 points from Nottingham very much. That's the third win out of four over them. Last season it was Sheffield that we seemed to have the thing, and Nottingham we struggled to buy a win against. So that's quite a nice change. I like going to Nottingham and winning. It's still rare enough that it feels special when it does.
Yeah.
So a great 4-point weekend for the Devils, and it's time to choose player of the week. Aaron, you didn't get to see any games. Do you want to have a vote based on anything, or should we just go to me and Sean?
Yeah, I think it's easier for you to do it, because otherwise... I've got nothing to base it on, like, so.
No worries. So, Sean, who gets your pick?
I don't know.
Lovely bit of dead air there. You know, everyone wants that on a podcast.
If you're not sure, you go first, and I'll think in the meantime. I disagree
with you. It's, you don't know what you've got until it's gone, type of thing. And Joey, your dad, has come back. It's his second weekend back, but he's been phenomenal. I think you just see that drive, the energy that he brings, the work rate, the skill level. It's made such a difference to the team. It's just that player there, that just another player that can give you such a lift. And I think he was excellent all weekend. I think he picked up an assist in both games, but it's not on the score sheet where you're looking with Joey, your dad, for that. It's the energy and the work rate and everything. It was a three-point weekend for him as well, on top of everything else. So Joey, your dad gets my vote. Sean, you've now got to, you're going to have to get off that fence.
Yeah, in fairness, I was looking at the defence, because I thought Tyson Strachan had a really strong weekend, and... but yeah, I think overall you're probably right. I think looking at some of the shifts that you put in that Nottingham game, I think that he had one particularly long shift, and the forecheck, the team obviously were drilled into the high forecheck and the intense forecheck, and Joey Adair was at the end of a long shift and just absolutely pounded it all the way around Nottingham's goal, just to put pressure on the puck carrier, looped back around and still got back involved in the play. And you actually were really excited about it, Paul. You were just, I thought you were in love.
It was love.
So yeah, can't disagree.
Yeah, well, congratulations to Joey, your dad. I got to say, you would have been quite a strong shout for my nomination had we bothered doing a podcast the weekend before. But we were rubbish, so you missed out, unluckily. One little thing from this weekend, just before we move on as well, more good news involving two of the three teams we've discussed. Nottingham went to Guildford on Sunday and lost 5-2. A couple of empty netters making the score seem a bit bigger. But it meant that the Devils have gone from, well, I was looking at Nottingham thinking, wow, they're miles away and they've got games in hand, to us being level on points. And I think Nottingham have only got one game in hand now, so... You know, the league has tightened right up with Belfast ahead, but with us with games to hand on them. So, you know, three teams sitting at the top of the league and all very close. And almost feeling a bit silly for my pessimism a couple of weeks ago now. But there we go. We're just going to stick with Guildford.
Early days.
It's very early days, but I was maybe having a slightly early tantrum about our chances, looking at the table, very stupidly. Sticking with Guildford and the Challenge Cup quarterfinals, the shock of the season so far was Milton Keynes picking Nottingham as their quarterfinal opponents for, I'm sure, no reason other than that's what they wanted. I can't imagine anything strange or underhand happened to convince them to do it, which resulted in us having Guildford, the team that we haven't beaten in the Challenge Cup yet. The quarterfinal away leg being next weekend. Aaron, what were your thoughts on it? I assume, like everyone else, you thought it was stonewalled, that we were going to get Nottingham?
Yeah, I don't know. It's quite a funny one, really. I don't see why a new team like Milton Keynes would go for a big team like Nottingham, knowing the possibility. Well, at the moment, I'd say Nottingham are the best team in the league. So if they're looking to progress in the competition where you basically get to pick your opponent, I don't see why you would pick the best team in the league and fancy it's over two legs. And, you know, I'm not doubting Milton Keynes might do everything to win. And, you know, they're not a bad team. But I think if I was a coach of any one of the teams in the league, possibly bar Sheffield, I would have gone for any other team bar Nottingham, just purely for the fact that they, you know, they've been outstanding all season so far. You know, yeah, we've won 3 and 4 games against them, but they they got to the quarterfinals of the CHL. They won 3 games in the CHL. You know, they're a fantastic team, and I don't know. It's just weird, really, isn't it? To me, it feels like something fishy is going on, but
the conspiracy. To put on top, you mentioned CHL. Corey Nielsen is a fantastic coach. If we had faced Nottingham, my conspiracy theorist hat sitting on, if we'd have faced Nottingham in the quarterfinal, the winner of that game would have then faced Sheffield in the semi-final, meaning that only one of those three teams could potentially be in the final. That's just a little fact. It's strange. It did end up with all the teams ending up in their seeding positions. So it could just be the Milton Keynes didn't want to veer away from the seedings. But yeah, as Aaron said, if I was Milton Keynes, especially the way we were playing when the draw was done, we were still slumping a little bit, struggling to find a bit of whatever we were lacking. I'd have picked Cardiff over Nottingham, you know, quite easily without a lot of thought, I think. So, it's a strange one. But it does mean that Devils got Guildford and, as I said, travel to the Spectrum a week Wednesday for that first leg. And the Devils be hoping to carry the league form into some Challenge Cup games against them instead of our Challenge Cup form. Also in the news, Devils were announced at the BBC Sports Personality Awards as the Team of the Year for BBC Wales. Sean, a huge honour, and for you, a worthy recognition of this success.
Oh, for sure, a massive accolade for us as well. Just to add to the titles, you know, to be recognised by the sort of Welsh media as a whole is fantastic, and it's great publicity as well. You know, that was on TV. A lot of people in South Wales won't know that hockey exists and will have seen the BBC Sports Personality Awards and thought, yeah, you know what, we're going to go and check the Devils out at some stage over Christmas. And that can only be good things. That can only, you know, spell good things for the club and the organisation. Who else could it have been, really? Who else has done anything?
I'm not anywhere near close enough to rugby to be able to say, but yeah, other than that, the Welsh rugby team didn't have a particularly good year, and that seems to be the go-to choice. So,
well, Swansea were almost relegated last year. Cardiff didn't get promoted and they're playing the Championship. Wales didn't do anything. And the regional rugby is almost dead. So,
what are you? The angry tweets from the ice hockey stroke rugby fans.
Oh, bring it on. Bring it on. In all seriousness, it was a great accolade and very proud to have been given it as a club, because it can only mean good things for us, and hopefully we can, you know, we can repeat next year.
That would be lovely.
But I think if Palace City get promoted, then we're going to struggle to do that.
Yes, yeah, that's very true. But hey, I'll take second place if they do get promoted. But we had a burning question, Sean.
We did. Just before
it's almost a burning question.
Yeah, almost a burning question. Forgot the hashtag, but we'll forgive him as a regular. Just before we go on to read it out, just want to say a massive thank you to everyone who tuned in to Play by Play and gave kind words and, you know, gave their thoughts on the team and the performance as a whole. So thank you very much to everyone for that. Okay, so Kenwin at Kenwin64, Kenwin Jones says, please talk about number six. I'm desperate to understand why I and my friends seem to be the only ones not to see his value, and I would like your thoughts. He's already been removed from the PK, and you made a good shout to remove him from the power play. Amazing away performance, closed them down for 50 minutes and still had so many offensive chances. So overall, what is Drew Parris adding to the team? Is, I believe, Cameron Jones' question. Aaron?
I'll just be brutally honest. I don't think he's performing well at all. I don't think he has since he picked up that knock at the beginning of the season. His skating isn't the best. He is a lot of turnovers. He's on the power play because he has a big shot, but he takes so long to settle for that big shot that it becomes no benefit to us. I just think, especially on the power play, as a D-man, yes, he makes mistakes, and yes, he's not the best, but you can't fault him because he is putting points up and he is getting on the score sheet, and, you know, there is things he could do more than that, like be a better defenceman, but he's still getting us there and things like that. But the fact that he's still on the power play and the way our power play is worked, that we cycle it well, and then we're always looking to Paris, and I think other teams have clicked onto that now, and it's just purely impossible to score with that line on the ice because it's getting to Paris, and then Paris is turning it over, and we're either on a breakaway or we're trying to get back into the offensive zone. It's really poor. I just at the moment I don't think he suits our team. I'll be happy when Lewis is back, and maybe we'll see a swap there, and, you know, and maybe make him play for his position more. If, you know, at the moment he's kind of settled. He's not really fighting for a position, but because he's getting rewarded for not playing brilliantly with the power play time. Like, you've got other players like, well, you've got Richie. You know, there's other D-men we could use on the power play, and we're not rewarding them with their brilliant play. We're rewarding someone who's not performing to get more minutes and more power play time to get more points. And it doesn't make sense. So hopefully when Mark Lewis comes back from injury, we can see a difference in him, and maybe he'll turn up a little bit more. But as I haven't been impressed with him since the get-go, really. But I missed quite a lot at the beginning of the season. But, you know, the fact that he's still on the power play after so long is an absolute joke. Yeah, he's got a hard shot, but one, how accurate is that shot? And two, why does he need 4 hours to settle to take the shot?
I think you mentioned in the beginning of the season, and missing it is an interesting point, because he did start well. He was, and looking in the CHL, he seemed to be at his level almost. It was, he didn't, obviously like the first Davos game where we got a bit blown away. But other than that, he always seemed to have time on the puck. He didn't seem, I think the biggest thing I've noticed with him is his skate. He doesn't seem the quickest player out there. And I didn't notice that in the CHL, which was a quicker level of hockey. So, you mentioned the knock he had, whether there's anything there, whether it's affected his skating style. It's interesting because I was really impressed with him in the opening sort of month of the season, however long it was, until he took that knock. But since then, pretty much, like you said, he's skating. So, and the power play is, there's two issues there for me, and you nailed them both. It was the cycling to him, but the shot is, it's not even that accurate. It's 1 in 10 of hitting the target, or be everything has to be blocked or going wide. Ken Wynn did say in his tweet though, Sean, that he was wondering why that him and his friends were the only ones to say it, to see it. But you know, from some of the tweets that came in following that, I think that's not the case. I think it's something that's been noticed in a wider fan base, if you like. There were quite a few tweets echoing his sentiments that they didn't understand what he was bringing to the power play. But it's really interesting given that with his pedigree and the way he started the season, I think there's definitely something there, but I don't know what it is that's meaning he's not showing it. And I think it was an interesting point from Aaron around not necessarily any competition for his place. Do you think it's likely to be that?
Maybe partially, but the one thing which grips me, and I didn't even realise it until Aaron just said it as well, is that you've still got Mark Richardson there as well, who's not playing any power play minutes. And last year, he played power play, and it was probably his most productive year. You know, you look at some of the big goals. I think Richie had a career high in goals last year, just plucking that out of thin air. But, you know, he scored so many big goals, and a lot of those were on the power play. And you just think, we're not having the success this year with the improvement we've made on defence. Or if you said put Paris or Richardson there, based on their pedigree as an offensive defenseman, you put Paris there every day of the week. But then, if he isn't producing, which he isn't, and we've discussed that the power play isn't clicking, why hasn't Richardson been given the opportunity to go back in that slot? You know, I think I agree with Aaron in the sense that other teams have cottoned on to it, and maybe he needs to sort of, you know, just be put there now and again as a bit of a weapon, you know, a bit of a special weapon when we need it. If like you said, Paul, it seems to just be a 1 in 10. It's like Fulton Reed going out there. You know, you just never know where it's going to go. And it's really disappointing because, as you said, he was at his level in the CHL. I thought he performed really well in the preseason game in Nottingham. He was my personal standout of the newcomers. I thought he was fantastic, and I just don't see what he's adding at the moment since we've added. Since we've added Strachan out there, you know, he'd be my first import defenseman to drop. I think Gleeson Fournier is having a fantastic year. Andrew Hotham's playing his best hockey for us. I'm a big fan of Tyson Strachan, as I just said. And you still got Mark Lewis to return, who's, you know, before he got taken out with his injury, he was gradually getting back to the best that we saw him last year. And so I think that when we get back to full fitness, he'd be the first player, first defenseman that I'd scratch. And I think that that was also echoed by someone else who sent us in a tweet. I'm just going to find it now.
For that, and I don't know why I doubted you, but if you take into account the Challenge Cup last season was Mark Richardson's highest in terms of goal scoring. And in league only, it's his highest in goal scoring since he reverted as a D-man. So, yeah, you'd obviously just echoed what a great year he'd had last season. I'm ashamed that you're not getting that chance on the power play.
Yeah, well, Phil Bean Egan said, I think the only reason he's still here is that he's fit while we're four guys down. Anthony Edwards said, sorry to say, but if anyone should be gassed, it must be him when we get back to full strength. It just seems to be a genuine concern from the fan base that maybe it's just not quite working out for him. I don't think he's necessarily a bad player. I just don't think at the moment it's working out for him right here. I hope it changes. I really, really do. I hope that, you know, as we go into the later stages of the season, he can come good. And, you know, maybe he's struggling to adapt as well to the physicality of the league, but then he's not using the speed that he showed in the CHL. Maybe the school is getting too much. You don't know, but I do hope it changes, but we shall see.
We shall. Thank you to Kenwin for the question. And, you know, as always, if anyone's got anything, get it sent over to us. With or without the hashtag, we'll use it, but we love a hashtag, so hashtag burning question. If you think of it, we haven't mentioned it yet. I'll pop it in now that we obviously didn't have any RAR mics this week, just from not being on air. So what you love and what you hate about a weekend, what you love and what you hate about a game, or anything else that's going on, send that in with hashtag RAR mic, tagging the Red Army Roundup Twitter account in, and we'll run through those in next week's show. So it's time to look ahead. We've sort of discussed the fact that we've got players out injured. Craig Moore's done for the year. I think all the press is saying the year. He's obviously had a surgery, so that's looking to be a long-term one. And then Justin Farina, Josh Batch and Mark Lewis also all sitting with injuries at the moment. Mean that the Devils are... you can't say we're not playing short in terms of we've got a full complement of Brits and imports, but haven't got any flex in that at the moment. And starting on Saturday, we run into a run of 9 games in 17 days. Aaron, how important is it for you that, not in terms of performance, just in terms of keeping guys fresh, that we can call on at least one or two of the injured three players?
Yeah, I think hopefully most of the guys that are out are close to fitness or almost there, but you know, it's massive. We've got a huge run in the games this weekend. We've got two massive games. It's gonna be a brutal running for Christmas for these guys, and I don't really know what to say. It's just gonna be taking such a big toll on the guys. I feel sorry for them because it's snowing outside. I don't want to go to work in the morning. If they're injured, why would they want to go to work?
They're injured and it's snowing. They are Canadian. They'll probably cope with it better than us. It's not really an easy way to follow that up, is there, Sean?
No, it's not.
Well, in the hope that there was an article from Terry Phillips on the Die Sport website earlier today saying that all three were hopeful of being fit soon and they were nearing fitness. So your fingers crossed that is the case.
But Terry didn't tell us what they thought of the weather, though. So we don't know how they're going to get on.
The snow could affect them.
So. We're lucky we're playing home because otherwise we'd have to travel as well.
Well, we've got to go to Scotland next week.
We'll call that one off. Too cold up here.
A big home doubleheader coming up, though, Sean. And we face Sheffield first on Saturday, and they're going to be stung by the criticism from their own fans, which usually isn't allowed by Dave Sims and Paul Thompson. They have quite a big strop about that, but Paul Thompson seemed to agree with them this time and cancelled their training session today and dedicated a whole article to just saying that.
Cancelled their day off, gave them a training session.
That's what I meant. Sorry, yes. A whole article for cancelling a day off. You know, nothing like publicly embarrassing, slating your players. Does have his merits at times, I guess, and never nice to face a team on the back of a poor performance and such criticism. You've got to think that Sheffield are going to come out Saturday with a bit of a point to prove, do you think?
I think so. As a rule, Cardiff's a hard place to come, and what better place for them to get their season back on track than at their probably their biggest rivals over the last couple of years in terms of competition. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a really exciting game. I've struggled to get really, really excited for a lot of the games recently, but I'm really looking forward to this one. I love playing against Sheffield. They're always the most important games. They're the ones you love to win the most, they're the ones you hate to lose the most, and that's why they're so exciting. And we haven't seen them for a month, I think. We played on the 4th of November. So, yes, I'm really looking forward to it. And I hope we can get Mark Lewis back and give us a bit more of an edge physically. Josh Batch, ideally, would be great to come back as well, because I think we're going to really need it. Sheffield are going to run us hard. They're going to be fast, they're going to be physical, and we're going to need to match them in every department. Because I still think Sheffield are a good side. I still think they could do good things this year. Obviously for them, it would be good for us.
there is an interesting stat fact that I've so I noticed whilst I was looking at the league table as we discussed how it's far too early to be looking at it. That whilst in the overall league, Sheffield are fourth with 29 points from 24 games. Within the conference, in nine games, they've only picked up 4 points with just the one win so far, which was that game in Sheffield against us. Mm-hmm. And that's got to be of some concern to them, Aaron, that against their biggest rivals, they've only managed to stop us taking 2 points out of nine games. In every other game, their opponents have taken maximum, and do you think that'll give even more steel to their resolve on Saturday and try and make that a really difficult game for us?
Yeah, of course. They're not a team that takes any team lightly, but like you said, they conference-wise, they've not played great at all. So I think they're going to look to do something different, and we're probably going to be the testers. And we've gone on a run so far, and in our luck, we'll probably get one of those 11-0 thrashings that we've received in the past. So
why would you even bring that up, Aaron?
Banter, isn't it? But yeah, we're going to be in for a long night. Not expecting anything special. Hopefully we get a couple of our big guys back just to hold fortress, but I'm not expecting anything special. Like you said, Sheffield are still a great team. They're going to flip the switch eventually, and I hope it's not this weekend.
Aaron, Mr. Confident today. And then on Sunday, Brayhead come into town. Team that have not performed, I think they've been into Cardiff once so far this year, and really, you're quite in the league anyway. We played them in pre-season as well. But a very flat performance from them. Didn't really offer that much, and they're still sitting outside the playoff places at the moment. 22 points in 22 games. The team that seems to be struggling, and lost 4-1 to Sheffield on, I think it was Friday night as well, another Friday night game. So a slightly different test, Sean, and it'll be the night before that'll not underestimate in Brayhead, but a tough game the night before could make that one a bit more of a banana skin.
Yeah, banana skin was the exact expression I was going to use, because Brayhead are the worst team we've seen in Ice Arena Wales this year. And we've played everyone. Edinburgh have been here, and I think Brayhead are the worst team we've seen this year. Just absolutely no identity in that team whatsoever when we last saw them. And their results have been very up and down, very staggered. They've really struggled to maintain any sort of consistency this year. I think the only reason Brayhead would be with a chance of winning that game is if we absolutely tank it against Sheffield and gas ourselves out, because I just don't think they're a very good side.
Wow, stinging criticism. But it's hard. We saw a vastly depleted Edinburgh side lose 7-2. If you take out the difference in numbers, there was not a lot of difference between the quality of either team. And Edinburgh definitely showed more fight, especially at the start of the game up their way a couple of weeks ago. So, yeah, hard to argue with that.
Sorry, Brayhead fans.
yeah, that there goes the one Brayhead listener I saw off the Fife listener a good couple of years ago now with the offhand comments. And we had an angry tweet, and I'm sure they've never tuned. Well, they said they were never going to listen again. If you've come back, welcome. We're now having a go at Brayhead. You should love us.
Yeah.
If anything's going to get us back in Fife's good graces, it's going to be slagging off Brayhead.
Yeah.
Fife are also having an excellent season. We're not playing them, but just in case.
And we hit the wall of shame.
Oh, yeah. The wall of shame. Where if you play 12 games in a season, you can make it on there. Go, Drew Miller. We're now just moaning about Brayhead, which must mean that we've run out of things to talk about. As we said, if you've got any burning questions, or your Ramite suggestions, or any other thoughts, anything you think of, we do love to hear from you all. So thank you all for listening. We promise not to be away so long again. We'll be back next week. to recap the home doubleheader against Sheffield and Brayhead and any other news that comes out. But for now, from Sean, Aaron and myself, that is your Red Army Roundup. Devon inside, every single one of us.